better.
I like it.
Well, there are two things to be done. First of all, we put him in the hospital and withdraw all television.
I see.
And then we give him this. Radio.
Dim down the lights. I'm Daniel Keelman.
Turn up the lights or dim them down, whatever you want to do. I'm Kyle Lamont.
And this is episode number 154 of Test Patterns. At the beginning of Mystery Science Theater 3000 episodes, it always would say, turn down your lights where applicable. And I always liked that. Very funny. So it was nice.
Yeah,
Kyle,
that.
You said turn off the lights right before we started recording. Nobody knows that except me, but it just reminded me of that. And so that's why I wanted to say that.
Turn them up. Turn up those lights.
Turn up the lights or turn off the lights. It's one or the other, people.
The common phrase, turn up the lights. Everyone knows that one.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to Test Patterns, a podcast where we talk about many, many things going on in the world today. But first, we talk about what's going on in our own lives. So, Kyle, I have a short little story to tell you before the podcast starts proper.
Yeah,
over the weekend, I was lucky enough, I was invited and attended a wedding of a friend on Saturday night, and it was a nice event. Everything went fine. It was nice to see some old friends and catch up, and had a splendid time. Everything was fine. The next day, after the wedding, I woke up, and my stomach was hurting quite a bit, and nothing dangerous happened. I'll leave it at that. I don't want to, put anything out there too much, but, nothing was coming back to, so to speak. But, right. And I did not drink a lot or anything like that. Everything was fine. But later on over the course of events, I found out that basically everybody at the wedding had gotten sick.
Oh no.
Yeah. So
real bad, food poisoning kind of stuff, or?
We've done a little bit of detective work, okay. And we think that actually, because there were some people that got sick that did not eat anything at all, and so we've deduced that it's something called the norovirus, which is apparently transmitted through very easily. It's almost airborne, if you touch something and then you touch your mouth, then you get it. So and that could have come from anywhere there, but many, many people from the wedding got sick, so it was definitely something there. That was the
Was it indoor or outdoor?
Indoor.
Yeah, I guess that makes more sense if it was.
It was actually
indoors.
At the very location where we had our high school reunion.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a pretty small room, so it makes sense that people are all breathing the same air.
Yeah. Huh. So it's unfortunate. It was fairly mild. It was more inconveniencing and annoying than anything else. It's just kind of made for can't really get much done the last few days, but I'm on the mend and. I think tomorrow I'll be basically back to normal. I'm hoping. So
yeah,
that's the
curve. So everybody, it's kind of like a one day thing for you, for that.
Yeah. And even then it wasn't like one day and you were stuck in bed all day or you were, passed out. It was just very, very just annoying. And just a stomach ache is really what it was. So yeah.
Weird. Yeah. I've heard of that before, but yeah, that's crazy. That was at a wedding. Everybody got bit.
Yeah. Apparently, it's very common at weddings and cruise ships and all sorts of places where people are contained and stuck in one area.
Yeah, that's where I've heard about it. Cruise ships. A few friends have gone on cruises, and then they get hit with that the week after, or during the actual cruise.
Yeah. So, people, don't be around them. Just don't be around people at all. That's my advice.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Well, I haven't been hit with any viruses, but I've been reading a lot of comic books. We didn't do a comics corner last week, so I'll do a quick little summation of what I've been reading. DC, they rebooted the DC universe yet again. As I was talking about, where they did the whole divergence, convergence event, where pretty much all the old continuity is back again, which everyone loved. I don't know why they went away with it for New 52, but this new thing is called. Instead of the DC Universe, DCU, it's called the DCU, the Wii U, but spelt out. But anyway, it's a little, a weird title, corny, but some of the new titles have been interesting. There's a new Justice League event with the Dark Side Wars, and then they brought Batman Beyond back, which was first an animated series, and now it's a comic book again. And then I haven't read all of them from this new week. There's been probably 12 issues altogether around there. some of them are like kind of limited series, like Bizarro, which is kind of like a weird Superman villain. He's got his own comic book for like 6 weeks. I started reading that, and that's pretty good. Batmite is another character that kind of came back. And some of them are just continuing series, like Lobo was recently rebooted, and he's got like a new design. And other ones are just like Green Arrow is that's the 41st issue. Like that hasn't really been rebooted, but they have a new creative team and it looks pretty cool. They're kind of going in a different direction. The same thing with Green Lantern. Now he's like a renegade. He's not like, he's not Space Cop anymore. So there's a lot of stuff to read and I'm liking it so far, but probably the best out of it, that whole new crop is, the Justice League comic book. Just cause it's kind of like a, I like the whole dynamic between the team, and then they got like some new members, and there's like a dark version of Wonder Woman that's the antagonist or one of the antagonists. So that's what I've been doing.
I'm not gonna lie, this all sounds like gobbledygook to me, and I don't understand how. Like, it's just, here's the thing: I'm not the type who's like, oh, comic books, those are such a low form of art or whatever. I think comic books are great. I just, like, yeah, just this whole, yeah, like, yeah, rebooting, retelling, do it again, nope, it's been a month, let's tell it again, yeah, and redo it this time, we're in space.
A lot of it's like, oh, this title's not selling well, let's kill it, and
yeah, exactly,
start with, like, a new thing. I was reading, like, and some of them are kind of interesting, like, there's a character that I don't think he's had a comic book for DC. He's always been, like, a C-level character called Midnighter. And I think they're rebooting him. I don't think this has been in the previous continuity, but now he's gay. But and it's kind of different because he's like this badass kind of like outlaw, just does whatever he wants. And it's an interesting book so far. I only read the first issue, but sometimes the reboot it's good for characters that are like kind of stale, whether it's heroes or villains. But a lot of times it's just to sell new issues to people.
Yeah, and that's the other reason I don't like it either, is because it's like, it's not really from a artistic reason of being, oh, this will be an really interesting story to tell. It's more like, well, this isn't selling, so let's just start over, let's try it again, let's do something more sensational this time or something different. And so on one hand, I admire them for at least trying a lot of things out. On the other hand, I think this is preposterous. That's all I can
think. Before we go on, let me ask you this. How does this sound? So Batman, he's not Batman anymore. Commissioner Gordon in a robot suit is Batman. How does that sound?
Sounds like really bad.
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. It's Scott Snyder. He's trying some new things, but he hasn't gone wrong yet. But yeah, we'll see.
I'm glad you're enjoying it. I can never read these things. That's all I know.
Yeah. There's also a new series called We Are Robin, and there's just like hundreds of Robins. I don't know what's going to go on with that. But
sure. Why not?
Because there's already been in like multiple Robins throughout the years. So let's just add like a whole team of Robins. We'll see what happens with that one. But it's a very interesting web to untangle.
Is it?
It is.
It's beautiful. So. I guess. All right. Well, I'm glad we only do the Comics Corner once a month if this is the kind of stuff that's coming out still. That's all I could say. Not your fault.
But
I like what you have to say.
There's some good gems. If people are following, like, check out the Justice League book, because that one's very kind towards newcomers, because most of those characters, they've been established DC heroes for a long time, so. It's not too hard to jump into that, even in this new, because this is the beginning of a new storyline.
Right. Yeah, Justice League being DC's version of the Avengers with Batman, Superman, and all the famous ones in it.
Yeah, though they were before the Avengers, but tit for tat.
I'm just saying the one that's more popular because DC does a horrible job of getting any of their properties to film. So. Marvel's the one who's beating them to the punch on that, and they're the one that's
they're really playing catch up. So it makes sense that people are like, "Oh, that's going to be a copy."
Yeah, yeah. All right. So, very, very interesting stuff. I honestly do enjoy hearing about it, just to hear about the next preposterous thing going on in the comic books world. I actually do enjoy these quite a bit.
Yeah, but, it's good for you because I can filter out all the nonsense and give you the best of the deals.
Okay, so let's talk about this week's episode of Test Patterns, number 154 for that matter. First up, we're going to be discussing the slept-on video game, the 2011 EA release, Bulletstorm. After that, we're going to be discussing the latest album from Mark Kozelek and his outfit of Sunkill Moon with their seventh album as Sunkill Moon, Universal Themes.
I don't even know how many albums.
I don't know how many albums between his solo stuff, between Red House Painters, his live albums, I'm not even going to bother, just seventh album of Sunkill Moon, Universal Themes. And then we have the third album from Florence and the Machine with their latest album, How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful. Kyle, do you have any beautiful things to leave us with before we get started here?
Not really. I pretty much covered with that... those beautiful DC books that are coming out.
That was enough beautifulness for all of us. Oh, yeah. No, your life's been tangled up in that. You don't have time for anything else, so there's nothing else you can talk about.
There's, other than that, Witcher 3 and NBA Finals coming up. That's all I'm doing.
Job hunting.
Oh, God.
No, the don't comic worry book about is that. Much more comic book is much more important than all those things.
Yeah, yes.
That's all I can tell. All right, well, then let's get going here. First up, we're going to be discussing the slept-on 2011 video game release, Bulletstorm.
He's here. The man who made us murderers. We were called Dead Echo. General Serrano's private assassins. For years, we were used. Manipulated. Betrayed. For this, Serrano's gonna pay.
All Final Echo survivors report position.
Ishii, I will not die for your revenge, Gray.
You caused all of this to settle some score with Serrano?
I am going to kill you, Gray.
You really need a breath mint.
I'll be honest, at first blush, I shouldn't really like Bulletstorm. I'm not like a really big multiplayer shooter fan, first-person shooter fan. I like my fair share every once in a while. I like a lot of the classic ones. But going in, like, I did hear a lot of good things about Bulletstorm, which is a 2011 first-person shooter video game made by the Polish developer People Can Fly and the American company Epic Games, which did the Gears of War games. And it's published by EA, just like we talked about Mirror's Edge, which was also published by EA. And it was for the PS3, Xbox 360, and PC. And I think the thing that really stands out about this game was that it's got this like really obnoxious, kind of crass humor. Sometimes it's a little witty at times, with it kind of like subverts female video game tropes and other things. And the other big thing is the whole electric leash gameplay mechanic that they're using. Other than that, it's a very linear first-person shooter kind of set in this weird, sci-fi, spacefaring, rogue planet devastation kind of world. But anyway, you play as Grayson Hunt. He's part of the Dead Echo team. They go and like assassinate people, and then at the very beginning, in one of the beginning chapters, you kind of learn like, oh, you killed this guy named Novak, who's this civilian reporter, and he's documenting all these terrible things that the company that the Dead Echo team are working for that they do, and you're pretty much covering that all up. So you learn like, oh, this guy named Serrano. Who's got this battle cruiser called the Ulysses. He's just a terrible person. And that kind of sets you off. There's the Ishii Sato, who's kind of like the straight man in this, because Grayson's kind of like the cigar-chomping, like almost like a Duke Nukem for 2011 kind of guy. So they kind of play off of that for most of the movie. Or not movie, but the video game. And I don't know. Like, it's... I played through the whole game because I kept hearing about this for kind of like, it's almost like a cult classic at this point, because I don't think a lot of people really played it. And a lot of people kind of just talk about the single player. Like, there's a multiplayer that I kind of touch, but at this point, nobody's really playing it because it's came out, like, you know, in 2011. But what's your background with this particular game, Daniel?
I remember hearing about this game getting released. I think there was a cover story for it on Game Informer, and it got a lot of really high praise when it came out. And it was one of those games that it just looked like another generic shooter to me, just action, you know, shoot a bunch of stuff, things explode, whatever. Because it's hard to stand out in the FPS genre, first-person shooters, because there's just it's oversaturated with Call of Duty clones. And
The characters have, like, this really, like, overly muscly look to them, kind of like the Gears of War characters.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other first-person shooters. Like
And People Can Fly made the Gears of War games, too, so, I mean, it made sense that they were going to look like that. But, yeah, I agree. Like, just it's very, which comes off as very bland, even if they are fun games. So getting me excited about it was really hard, even though I kept hearing, like, pretty wonderful things about it across the board, that it really reinvented the genre in a nice way. I was really just, you know, it was one of those games I always felt like I'll get around to it at some point. Wasn't high on my list. And I recently started it because we were doing this, and even at the beginning of it, I was a little bit, I wasn't enjoying it at the start. I thought, like, this is just feeling like another standard action game, just whatever, just plowing through these things. There's no jump button, especially, which I thought was annoying. And I was just like, what is going on here? But then something happens pretty early on where you acquire the whip ability, where you can pull things towards you from afar. And then all of a sudden, it all starts to make sense what they're trying to do with this game, because what the fun of this game comes to is you have this whole, it changes up the dynamic where instead of, like, a lot of first-person shooters where you're crouching, then ducking out and shooting at things, and crouching and ducking out, you have this ability to both pull things towards you and kick them away. And when you do, I know that sounds, like, simplistic, but it's actually really fun because you pull them towards you, and then time slows down, and you can start to pull off these really elaborate, really, really fun, silly combos that they get pretty creative about, kind of in, like, an almost Mortal Kombat-esque way, but maybe a little more cartoony. And, you know, you could, like, throw enemies into other enemies, or you could pull things towards you and then, like, attach a mind to them and push them away from you. Like, there's all sorts of things you can do. And that's where the fun of this game really, really lies. And I was genuinely enjoying that.
I found myself, I kept looking at that skill shot list, and it's real simple. Like, I think you hit, like, I was playing it on PS3, and you hit, like, triangle to kind of, like, filter it out and see, like, what's left on your list to complete. I ended up, like, I finished the game and got a bunch of them, like some of the more, like, crazy ones where you have to, like, juggle a bunch of enemies and, like, kind of, like, combo it all together. I didn't end up doing all those, but I was pretty surprised, like, going in, like, I thought it was going to be a lot harder to, like, kind of whittle down that list of skill shots and get more and more, like, credits for upgrading your guns. But I don't know, like, it had a good amount of, like, difficulty where I never thought that I was... There's always, like, another carrot in front of you. Because you keep unlocking, like, new guns. And the guns are, like... At first, they're pretty standard. Like, you know, they have, like, the regular shoot. And then, like, they all have, like, a kind of, like, a charge shot. But they all sound and act, like, pretty differently. I really like the sniper rifle later on where you kind of, like... You can hone in you basically move the bullet in real time because it's all slow. And you can either, like, shoot it like a regular sniper rifle bullet, or you can make it explode. And there's, like, a few other, there's, like, they all have, like, all the skill shot titles are ridiculous. Like, premature, like, ejaculation or something like that.
Right.
Like, the humor is basically along that line for all those skill shots and also the dialogue.
Which is what initially really turned me off from wanting to play the game. It just seems super bro heavy, and it is. I never really
got over it. But the actual moment to moment gameplay is really fun.
Yeah, I mean, it is to the game's detriment. I get that they're going for a certain style, and they achieve that. And I just find that even if they're doing it in a tongue in cheek way, I just don't care for it. It's not that funny to me, and it just comes off. It's kind of like Starship Troopers-y, I don't know how to really describe it, but it's just, like, very, meh. I don't know. I like
yeah,
more.
Yeah, it's, like, It's like Starship Troopers without, like, the political commentary of war.
Right, right. Like, I mean, like, you can be satirical and do this whole thing, but maybe be a little bit more like, I don't know. Like, there's definitely genres that have made fun of this well.
My problem with it is that they didn't... I wish they had gone, like, a little more overboard with it. Like, I don't know, get, like, a better writer where it's almost like a Borderlands situation where it's...
There we go.
Comedy moments, like... Especially towards the end of it, they got super serious with, like, the whole, like, the female character that pops up. Like, she doesn't know about, like, what happened to her father and, you know, the Trishka, her name is. And that whole thing, like, they keep bringing it up and, like, getting close to, like, revealing what happened. And then when they finally do, it's just kind of, like, at this point, like, I mean, this whole game has been about, like, ridiculous, like... shots where you're shooting people in the nuts or, you know, shoot them in the butt and pulling off armor and then shooting them in the butt. And it just felt like there was a real tonal shift that just didn't make any sense.
I agree. I think they should have gone for an over-the-top storyline too. And you're absolutely right. Like a Borderlands tint on things, like that type of humor would have really made this a lot better.
Yeah. And I think it was only that final chapter that really did that. Like they really just... pour that home, like, we don't have to be traumatic, because the whole stuff at the end, like, it's really not, like, revealing too much, but there's, like, this DNA bomb that the Serrano guy is gonna use on the planet, because, you know, they're just gonna, like, blow out everything, because it's just, like, a nuclear wasteland at this point. And there's a funny bit where you're, like, trying to escape the ship, and you pretty much come back to the same room where the DNA bomb is at, and they're like, ah, shit.
That's actually good. Yeah,
like I like those moments because it makes fun of video games, but in a nice way, like not too tongue in cheek, and basically what I hope this game was going to be about, like just being silly. But I still thought the gameplay was enough to really draw me in.
I agree. Like, the gameplay is really what keeps me going through this. And it also does a good job of, like, giving you these new abilities. And like you mentioned, there's that whole skill tree where it tells you, here's what you do to pull off these combos and you get points for doing it. I just kind of kept going through that I use that as a guide, like being like, okay, I'll try this one next and do that. And it's very, very helpful and really fun to try to pull those off. And then I also think that the environments, while not entirely original, it's like a dystopian, it's in the 26th century, it's a dystopian, you know, sci-fi thing going on. But they've got some really, really cool set piece moments. Like early on in the game, you're on this kind of on rails part where you're on this tram and it's running away from this giant, giant cog that's chasing you.
Yeah, I really like that.
And it's really well done. Yeah, that's something I've seen before, but it's actually got some really cool interactive environments and some enemies you're fighting during that. And the game does a really good job of like bringing those things on at a pretty regular time. Like just around, you feel like you've gone down yet another hallway. It throws something new at you or a new technique you can do to take out some enemies. And so I think it's balanced well, gameplay-wise, really, really well. I really could care less for the story. It's just the gameplay that keeps me coming back to it.
Yeah, one thing that did you play any of the co-op? Like,
no.
Going into the site, I thought, like, oh, this game, like, it's just meant for co-op. Like, you could, like, play with somebody and just, like, string together your combos and getting crazier. But it seems like the co-op is just, like, this separate mode. I haven't really dug into it at all, but, yeah, I think they were saying that, like, the co-op mode kind of broke the game, so they didn't go down that path, which I could kind of see. They really set up the very end. Like this game's a total setup for a sequel that never happened. Like they planned for it, but just didn't sell enough.
That's the thing is this game did, like, as far as I can tell, pretty horribly when it came to sales. Like I don't think it did decently at all. It was marred in a lot of controversy. Like Fox News at the time had, because it's a pretty violent game. No more so than, like, anything that, you know, Grand Theft Auto releases every few years. So I doubt it's kind of preposterous.
Or even, like, real old shooters were...
Yeah, you can go back to, like, the Duke Nukem 3D, and this is just as violent, probably. So, yeah. I mean, it's preposterous, but it got a little bit caught up in that. It got a little bit caught up in, I think, I think the title of it is kind of generic, and I think that it's got a... It's kind of a hard thing to explain to people, but it's a shame, because I do think the game... is worthy of... I'd rather see more games like this than just, you know, another standard FPS that we normally see. It would be nice to see more things like this. So it is a...
Right, right.
It's a shame. And I think you're right. I think, like, a lot of people just don't know about this. I see it on sale on Steam all the time or in stores. So I'd say...
Yeah,
like, you know,
I got it through... well, you got it for me for...
I think I had it for Christmas, like, a few years back, yeah. And even by then, it was on sale. It was, like, super cheap. I mean, I think if you see this game somewhere, it's totally worth... It's worth a playthrough. I don't know if it's worth, like... I don't... It's not, if you're a really big FPS fan, I think you can really find something to, like, really go in and, like, beat it on a harder difficulty and stuff. Like, it's got enough charm there.
Well, and there's... Like, I didn't really check it out. I kind of checked out the multiplayer or what's left of the community that's playing that. Mm-hmm. But there's also that Anarchy mode, which is the online-only co-op, which is just... It's just, like, an arena mode where you're... There's six arenas, and you're just killing people just like you do in the single-player campaign. But I think the single-player campaign, especially now when it's, like, so cheap, it holds up. It still has, like, problems where they're set up for a sequel and just tonal stuff. Like a lot of first-person shooters, the end boss is just a joke because it's just all quick-time events. And it's also a dumb thing where, like, the whole game, you're using your leash to grab things. And there's a gun on the floor, and you're, like, inching towards it. And I was like, why don't you just use the leash to grab the gun and then shoot the guy?
Yeah.
And, of course, the villain gets away because they want to set up a sequel. But I don't know. I do like... do you mind if I spoil it a little bit?
Spoiler alert, like, everybody else. I don't care, yeah.
Yeah, like, there's a bit, like, towards the end where you're, like, you're there with Ishii and also Serrano, and you're kind of, like... It reminded me of comic books where you kind of have to, like, work together with your villains to get through something. And that brought up some, like, interesting, like, dialogue. Like, it was still pretty obnoxious at times, but it kind of peppered the experience of just, like, mindlessly shooting at things.
Right.
So, yeah, I just wish that they had, like, a little better writer attached to it. Like, like that Borderlands touch.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So, but either way,
but very fun overall.
It's very fun. It's so much better than you would think. Even if you're not, like, a normal FPS fan, like, even I was very surprised by this game. It's got some really, really nice humor to it. The gameplay, it took me a little while because I'm not a big Battlefield or Call of Duty player. But so I actually just got off of, like, playing, like, Far Cry 4, which has a different kind of combat style to it. So it was a little bit different to me coming into this one. However, once you get used to it, it's really, really well done. I think this game.
Yeah,
really,
I think
it.
The last first person shooter that I actually even tried playing, like, you know, regular deathmatch multiplayer was Destiny, which was fun for, like, a little bit. Mm. But most of the time, I, like, with Far Cry 4, like, I have no desire to play multiplayer.
Yeah,
like, I heard some, like, fairly good things about it, but I don't know. I think it's pretty rare that I'll check out the multiplayer. Like, Uncharted and Last of Us, they were pretty good, but. Yeah, I heard some good things about the multiplayer for this, but I don't know. The few modes that I checked out, like, it was pretty standard. It was kind of cool that you had, like, these team kills that are very essential to it, where you rack up everything and kind of have, you know, you have, like, there's only, like, you have, like, these team goals for, like, bullet kicks or skill shots. So it's kind of an interesting way to approach what you normally would expect to just be, like, a all-out assault on everybody else. So,
all right. Well, so that about wraps it up, though, for me, Kyle. Anything else on Bulletstorm?
No. Yeah, okay. It was pretty fun. Like, if you see it on a sale, which I'm sure it's already very discounted, don't hesitate to check it out.
Yeah, it's on all the major systems from last generation. So, yeah, it's definitely worth your time to check out. That is the slept-on game Bulletstorm. Check it out. Next up, we're going to be discussing the seventh studio album from the cranky old man himself, Mark Kozelek, with his outfit Sunkill Moon, with their latest album, Universal Themes.
Here to give her my love when and why.
I'm going to tell you a little story because, well, what the heck, is how Universal Themes begins in Mark Kozelek's very expected gruffy voice at this point. And they're coming off their very critically acclaimed sixth studio album, Benji, from a couple years back, which was a very surprise hit for a band that's been doing things for a while. And
or last year.
Was it last year? Really? Just last year? Jesus Christ. Yeah. I mean, well, he releases like four albums a year as like whatever outfit he wants.
I'm not surprised. Like for any other artist, I'd think Universal Themes is like a quick cash in because he's kind of the zeitgeist of the indie world right now. Yeah. But he always does this. He's always releasing something every year.
Right. So as I quoted before, that's how the album begins on the song "The Possum," and the song is. The album is certainly in vain of a lot of Sun Kil Moon stuff. It brings back his stream of consciousness singing, as he's as Mark Kozelek has been known for, and he also is reunited with his Benji collaborator Steve Shelley, the drummer from Sonic Youth, who provides the percussion among other things on this album as well. And the album stretches the limit on the songs many times. It's only eight tracks, but don't let you think it's a short album by any means.
There's some beefy ones on there, that's for sure. Actually, all of them are beefy.
the shortest song on here is just shy of 7 minutes, and that's like an anomaly if anything. And he's definitely got a lot to say again, and he's bringing a lot of his like similar style from before. And whereas Benji was an album that was about it was loosely about death and about coming to terms with that. Universal Themes seems more about, I guess, a legacy, if you will, and thinking about it's maybe a little bit more, a little more optimistic at times. It's not as tight as the last couple of albums as Sun Kil Moon.
There's not as many like oh, this is a song. Like there are moments on Benji, like. Michaeline, where that's like, oh, that's just a song. Like, there were plenty of songs on that one where they were kind of stream of consciousness, but on this one, like, he's pretty much throwing everything at the wall that he's done with Sun Kil Moon or Red House Painters or his solo stuff.
Yeah.
There's like some solid moments, but it is very scattershot.
Yeah, and even their previous albums, like Admiral Fell Promises, that was about like travel largely. So I mean, like they certainly have had like much more tighter albums before, and this one is a lot more looser. And because of that, it's very very hit or miss. This is not a great introductory record to a Sun Kil Moon fan. Go listen to Benji if you want to like get an idea of what this is about.
Yeah, or April's really good. That's more of a straight-ahead folk rock album.
I would say that this is one that, if you're a Sun Kil Moon fan, I think you certainly have a lot here to enjoy. There's some songs on here that did stand out to me a lot. Most noticeably, I think there's some interesting ideas going on here. Kyle, just wait a second.
Go ahead.
A lot of the best surprises in this album come pretty late in, actually. I would argue that the last track on here, which has a great title and is one of the better songs, This Is My First Day and I'm Indian and I Work at a gas station. That's one of the better songs here, where there's some interesting ideas going on. And I think that he's got some really... It is going for some of those deep moments in the small things in life. For instance, he's got some, a good reflection on The Possum, which the opener's a really good song, too. He says, I want to grow old and walk the last walk, knowing that I, too, gave it everything I got. Like, he's got these very, very profound moments in that speak-songy style that Kozelek does. However, it's sometimes, as you were saying, Kyle, like, it just becomes kind of just, instead of using that to great effect, as he did on Benji, and sometimes here, other times he's just doing it and it seems downright lazy or just, like, jam-worthy almost. It needed
more of an editor, like self-editing or, producing kind of editor from Shelley. I know he self-produced Benji and a lot of his other records, but it just once felt like he was going more for like that real stream of consciousness stuff. Like even there are a few songs on this where he's almost like rapping in his, you know, in his very Mark Kozelek way. Yeah. And then when he finally gets to, like, that revelatory, like, lyrical moment about something that's really small and mundane, like talking to a gas tent attendant in the last track where it's his first day and he's an Indian. He's just scared because he thinks that people are going to hate him or like try to shoot him. It just kind of like at that point you're exhausted because the track is so long and you've gone through like all these different periods where you're like, there's like some folk rock. There's some times where it's just like spoken word or something goes like really fast. And then I've really liked his bits where he really stretches his muscles as far as production wise in the last few albums, where it sounds very baroque and his vocals are very layered, and that nylon string guitar is very layered too, and it sounds like almost I don't know, like the only way I can really describe it is like it's very, I don't know, like not religious in nature, but like, I don't know, almost like communal, like kind of meditation. Like, and it's based off of like stuff that's just weird observances, like you were saying, like seeing a dead possum or watching HBO with his girlfriend.
Yep.
Or talking about like he really loves boxing, so he always throws in stuff about boxing.
Yeah.
Like even Sun Kil Moon is a reference to a famous boxer.
Yeah.
So it's just, I really like certain moments in this, but when it all comes together, it's not as good as his other albums. But I still keep coming back to it because it really has these cool sonic and lyrical moments. Like Ali Spanks 2, the penultimate track. That's a, you know, for a song that's like 7 minutes, it goes by pretty well. Like, just like with the percussion and the nylon string guitar. I don't know, like there's some banjo and keyboards and all that. Like he's getting a lot better with like the production. Like for a while he was real spare. Like, I mean, for most of his career, he's been real spare. Like even the Red House Painters days.
Yeah.
But now he's like really stretching his muscles out. And I'm glad that he got attention for Benji. Like granted it was very due because it's a great album, but, yeah, this one just seems like, you know, the things in between that you don't really hear about, like his Christmas carols or his live albums.
Right. Well, I think that even Benji was a surprise to them that it got as much acclaim as it did. Like, sure. I think Sun Kil Moon and Mark Kozelek like had found comfort in being this, you know, moderately successful indie rock band that was certainly, he's a guy that's, isn't he 50 now? I mean, like, you know, he's definitely,
I mean,
he's making a living doing what he's doing. And so there's something to be said for that, especially when you're not like breaking out like a lot of the bigger indie acts do. And I think it was a surprise to them that broke out. And I agree, it definitely deserved it. And this album feels like a natural step forward from just because this is his nature of just releasing another album. And so I'm not like, I wasn't expecting this to be another thing like Benji, because it's going to be hard for almost any band to do that. And
it's not a huge step forward, but there's a lot of like really cool moments.
It's hard because like
majestic moments.
Yeah. Like I wouldn't say like, don't listen to this album, but it's not a great introductory record. If you've never listened to Sun Kil Moon, I think it would like scare you away. And even for the Sun Kil Moon's fan, it's a hard one to digest because there's just some, and I know Sun Kil Moon does these long tracks before. They do these very circular tracks where, you know, he has the theme and he just keeps coming back to it. But I feel like on this album, I agree that he needed an editor, and I don't think he spent as much time on the melodies of a lot of these songs. A lot of them just end up sounding really, really similar or really plain.
From Finland and soon I'm off to Switzerland for a part in film, but when I get home, I'm gonna go see my friend and keep her company for a week or so. I feel bad for not going there now, but I got a life out here. I need to hold the fort down. Got hardwood floors, buckling up in an old leaking pipe, and 30 yards of fallen fence that I need to put back upright. And I broke a tooth.
And they lack that authenticity where Benji had these very, very
so you're thinking about it, like,
sounding themes.
Like, remember the final track from Benji, Ben's My Friend?
Yeah.
That had a very, like, the story behind that is that he had like one that was more like the usual Sun Kill Moon kind of track, and then he also had like the more electronic thing, and then he ended up going with the more electronic thing. And that melody and a lot of the songs on that album, like, they really stand out, whereas I do agree that a lot of this is just like, it's like a fire hose of lyrics and all of his thing, all of his musical touchstones that he's used in the last, you know, decade or so.
Yeah. And he tries to jazz it up too. Like the one song on here, I think it's With a Sword of Grace, I Walked in the Bathroom to Cry, to the Bathroom to Cry. That's like a more metal-y song where he really amps up the distortion. Yeah, and he punches it. And he's got a little bit. It changes up the variety a lot, and I enjoyed that one too. I don't necessarily remember.
That's why it stands out,
yeah. I don't remember the lyrical content of that one, but it certainly was. I'm like, oh, okay, this sounds, you know, at least a little different than what's going on. And I like whenever you were saying the nylon string guitar gives that communal sound, and I do agree. There's something very folky, and I mean that in like a campfire-y way that I like. And I also like when he does that thing where he's like doubling his vocals and he gets that really, I guess, like 360 sound. Like it.
Yeah, especially on this one, like sometimes he'll be like higher kind of falsetto, but then a lot of the tracks on this, especially that With a Sword of Grace, he's a little more raw on this one. Just like kind of hoarse from just like spewing all these lyrics out into the mic.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that. Like, you don't hear that from him, but you don't hear from a lot of indie artists, because it's a little more like, you know, quaint and very precise. I'm thinking of like bands like Grizzly Bear, which are good bands, but they're very meticulous.
Almost like too clean at times.
Yeah, they don't necessarily let all the strings and tatters show.
Yeah.
But I still love that. I think my favorite moments on this one were just like really fun, like lyrical jabs. Like, everyone associates Mark Kozelek with being a very dour, sad musician, but I really like Cry Me a River, Williamsburg, Sleeve Tattoo Blues, where he's making fun of hipsters in Williamsburg and saying like, your problems with life are nothing compared to the rest of, you know, the world.
Right.
And it's just like, that's why I think I keep going back to him, even though he releases so many crazy things. He's a very interesting and enigmatic character.
Well, and there's not many people like him doing what he does, whether it's not just the style, but also the content that he's singing about. It's definitely incredibly authentic and very one of a kind. Like, I can't think of many other artists that I can compare him to. So he's a singular voice in music in general, and it's really, really nice to hear. And he does it well. Again, the album's not bad. It's just not great either. And I just stand by, you know, like, if you wanted to sample a couple tracks, I'd say maybe try the Possum out and see what you think about that. But otherwise, go listen to some of their other albums and try those out first, and then maybe get into this one.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, this has like the DNA, but it's all like scattered and kind of thrown together in weird ways.
Yeah.
And I really like that, just kind of parsing it out, but that's because I'm used to checking out. Like, I know all those like touchstones, and it's kind of fun doing that. But yeah, I do agree that it's better to check out Benji or April and any of these last few albums. Like, they're very good.
Basically anything except Tiny Cities, which is their Modest Mouse covers album. Just don't listen to that one.
Yeah, that one's you'll get enough nods to Modest Mouse with his albums.
Sun Kill Moon is still a band I need to see live. I really do want to see them live one of these days. So hopefully at some point.
You know what? You'll be surprised. I've never seen them live. Much as I've like reviewed them, interviewed them multiple times. Never seen them live.
Yeah,
I should do that.
Yeah, well, maybe this will be the year. We'll see. Because he tours nonstop, so I'm sure we'll have a chance.
Yeah, it'd be good. Like, with all the Benji stuff, and this album has some good tracks, too.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up. So that is Sun Kill Moon's Universal Themes, which is out now. And lastly, we're going to be discussing the latest album from Florence Plus the Machine, or Florence and the Machine, as they're known, with their latest album, How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful. We'll be right back.
This week, Florence and the Machine, which is a band from London that formed in 2007, is releasing their third album, How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful, on Island Records. And Florence the Machine, who's led by lead singer Florence Welch, in addition to the rest of her band, but she's mainly the main songwriter behind everything and singer. They got a lot of acclaim for their previous albums like Ceremonials and Lungs, which is the first record. Very big songs on both of those, and a lot of acclaim with like Grammy Awards and Brit Awards, and a bunch of best new artist type of acclaim. Kind of this melding of rock and pop and soul, and more Baroque stuff, almost like a Kate Bush kind of thing at times. But it's a band and a songwriter that's just meant for the festivals and big stages, like just out of the gates. And I've heard her biggest songs quite a bit, just because they're everywhere. But I've never really actually listened to full albums by her. So this is my first introduction to Florence and the Machine. And I don't know, I kind of like this overall. Like it didn't grab me like completely where I'm just falling in love with it. But I think the main draw with her is just her singing voice. A lot of times the lyrics are pretty, I kind of have a pet peeve with like pop songs where the singer's like asking a rhetorical question over and over again. And she does this a lot on this one, but there's still like a lot of like really catchy melodies on things like Delilah and even like One Kind of Man, where I don't necessarily like that song completely, but I do like a lot of the instrumentation behind it. And it's a little more of a rocky release than some of the more pop oriented songs that I've heard from her. But Daniel, you've listened to the first two, right?
Yeah, in preparation for this, I had heard of her too because of her popular songs, and I went back and listened to her first two albums again, and to get me ready for this one. And I don't think this will be a popular thing. I think her first album, Lungs, a lot of people probably consider that to be her best, but I would actually argue this is probably her best album as a whole. I think her albums, from what I've heard of them. Well, I've listened to them. They're kind of hit or miss with the songs. They certainly have some really, really great songs on them. Like, her singles are fantastic, and she's got some good deep cuts on them, too. But they're very inconsistent. Like, you get a lot of the same going on with them, so it just becomes kind of pretty sounding, but not really a lot of replay to them. And this album, I feel like, is her most consistent by far. It's got actually a nice arc to it, and it many, many times on the album, I found myself really enjoying it, and songs were distinct from one another. And I agree, like, she's got this really, what I like about Florence is that, like, well, one, she's like a really involved artist. Like, she, you know, she's a writer on all the songs that she does. And I also like that she's bringing back a lot of, she's got kind of she's like a popular Joanna Newsom, where she's got a lot of classical inspiration on her music. She's got a harp, and she's got a lot of really like pretty sounding things, but she uses them with like a somewhat of a pop bent, and I like that. It's a distinct voice in a otherwise very saturated sound of pop music. So I'm rooting for Florence, and her voice is the star of the show. She's got such a powerful booming voice, and she uses it, and it's a little bit more controlled on this album too, whereas the first two she kind of like gets a little big, like almost like, you know, exploding in a cave almost at times, which is like powerful but kind of like drowns out everything. And I feel like this album is the first one where it actually seems like everything's mixing well together. It's a little more low-key, but still, you know, she still really belts it out every now and then too, and it's really, really powerful.
Yeah, I heard that especially on the opener Ship to Wreck, where she has all these like kind of the sweep of strings in the background. And she still has that very kind of overzealous chorus, like even at the beginning of a song, like it was like exploding before it's even reached its due. But I think the production and the people that she's surrounded herself with, since she's, you know, a really established pop star, like it all works together a little better overall. I think the main stumbling blocks for me were just, you know, sometimes the lyrics were just redundant or, you know, just repetitive in a way that kind of dragged on me, or just the melody just didn't really stick in a way that her biggest singles have. But yeah, I mean, it kind of makes me want to check out like Lungs, because I hear a lot about Lungs. It seems like Ceremonials was more of like a lull for her. Would you agree
about
that?
Yeah, it is. Like, it was, she took a lot of time off between this. Like, Ceremonials, her second album, was in 2011, and it's been, you know, 4 years, and I think the time off was probably good. I think she probably got a lot of really good acclaim with Lungs, and then very quickly had to make a second album, and that's hard to do when you're an up-and-coming artist. So
yeah, because she's probably like writing songs on the road.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
know, just kind of gets rust out there.
Yeah, and she got lucky, though. I mean, there are some really good songs. Like Shake It Off was wildly successful from her second album.
Yeah.
So I mean, she certainly,
yeah, heard that one.
And this album, I agree, like it's lacking. It doesn't have those huge catchy moments that our first two albums have, but I don't think it needs it either. I like that this album is a little bit more laid back and downtrodden, even though she still gets big. Like you said, Ship to Wreck, and then later on it's got that song Third Eye that's pretty booming in that one too. But it works.
I think it's more of a piece, like artistic statement for her, because, you know, she's three albums deep. But then that also brings along like some stumbling blocks, because I think Queen of Peace is very overlong and kind of meanders with its instrumentation. Just kind of like almost like falls back into that bad habit of her just belling her way through like a song, and then the actual song doesn't really make up for the fact that she's, you know, screaming at the rooftops about, you know, some lost love or, you know, who knows what. Things falling apart relationship-wise, or...
Right.
Honestly, I didn't really follow a lot of the lyrics too closely, because it kind of just... It was more about the performance and less about, you know...
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Like, I mean, they're pretty standard pop territory, what she travels here, you know, just, you know, either being broken or being in love or whatever it is. But most of it's about being broken, though, and being sad. And but what she does is admirable here. It's like, it sounds nice and it sounds different. And I think for the most part, you got some really nice different songs on here. A lot more introspective than her other albums, which seem to be about like very external, very out there. And this one's a little bit more, I guess, like on the... working through it side of things. I think that it, I think especially this album has some really great, like, beginning and end to it. I think the first three tracks, like, that What Kind of Man song, I think is, like, a really interesting choice for one of the singles here. It's not, like, her typical big booming song. It's got a little bit more of, like, a ominous tone to it. And, and then the follow to that, How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful, I thought that's, like, a really... you know, nice take on a title. Like, I'm surprised that's a title track when it's such a kind of low-key song to be here.
There were some moments like that, because I've always known her as, like, you know, the big, you know, festival singer, where, you know, you're getting out. The reason why you have those big slots is because the songs necessitate that, because she has those big choruses. And, yeah, it was very interesting to... hear some, you know, songs that aren't necessarily like great in terms of how it's all put together, but it did give her like some time, some breathing room in between like those big moments.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I do agree, though. The lyrics are standard. Like, the songs sound better when sung than reading them. Like, for instance, on Caught, she sings the line.
Yeah.
I can't keep calm, I can't keep still, pulled apart against my will. That's, you know,
and that's
on
all
paper.
You can really hope for,
but,
pop songs,
yeah.
Because a lot of pop songs, like, you read them off the page and they sound really bad. But
exactly. But
a really good singer can sell it.
And she's a really good singer. So, I mean, it's definitely,
yeah,
like, she can make something sound pretty good no matter what. So it's nice to hear. I was surprised by this album. I think that, you know, I definitely would like to see her at some point. I think she would be a really good festival guy. I know she was at Coachella, and then she apparently, like, jumped on stage and hurt her leg. And so now her tours, she's had to, like, be more sitting on a stool because she can't, like, move around as much as she usually does, I guess.
Okay. I guess that's kind of it's kind of brought up with what kind of man, because she's talking about, like, a broken limb and...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, some things about, like, not being able to get out of bed.
And, oh, gosh.
So, yeah, it's kind of interesting that she threw that into there. From what I've... Correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I listened from Lungs and Ceremonials, it seemed like she was a little bit more, like... I hate to say it, because it's... A lot of, you can say it about a lot of female artists, and I think it's overplayed, but I think she was a little bit more of like a watered down Kate Bush, like more of like a pop oriented Kate Bush, because she always had like this ethereal, like elemental lyrics. And it, I think now that it's more about like personal life and still like very bombastic, like it's a little more relatable, I think.
Yeah.
You know, she's a pop rock songwriter, so I think these songs are a little bit more, it makes sense for what she's doing.
Yeah, I think this album, she leans more PJ Harvey than Kate Bush. Like, I think it's got a little bit more of a, you know, spatial production to it, as opposed to just, like, focusing on that voice. And it's got a little bit more ideas that it's trying out. Not to say that Kate Bush doesn't try out a lot of things, too, but I think it's just, it's going for a more downtrodden tempo. So that's kind of how I felt about it. At the end of the day, but
yeah, less operatic
and that's very very true. Yeah, the other albums are much more operatic than this one. This one has those moments again, but like, you know, for the most part, it's pretty low key. Very pleasantly surprised by this. I liked it a lot more than I was expecting. And it's worth listening to her other stuff too. Like, she's got two other albums and they're good. Like, you should certainly Lungs is a really good album. Like, I do recommend that one.
Yeah, yeah, I it's pretty true that like. There's some quieter moments I think that are better for her, like kind of the ballads, Various Storms and Saints and Long and Lost. Like, I almost wish she would, I don't know. Well, she wouldn't do it, but like kind of like do like a more of a folky kind of album.
Hmm. Yeah. That would be very interesting. She's
but still arranged in a bombastic way with like, you know, the strings and vibrato, like guitar and all that.
Right. That's true. That would be really interesting for her. She might get to that point. I mean, this album is, of all her albums so far, this one is like definitely a step, not as outgoing as the production is, but I still think there's a lot going on here too. That doesn't mean that it's still, you know, not well done, but
because if you don't have the melody and the like those really catchy lyrics, like you can get kind of old. Like, no matter how great you are as a singer, like it's just, it's a little too much of the same thing.
Exactly.
It makes sense to have like those slower moments so you earn those really bombastic numbers that of course are going to be on a, you know, somebody that's on Island Records.
I'm rooting for Florence. Like, I think she's got a really distinct style and I'm happy that she's as popular as she is. I think I really do hope she keeps, cause she's like well-trained. I hope she keeps coming back for more. This is definitely a step in a good direction for her.
Yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, it makes me kind of, I want to check out Lungs and maybe Ceremonials.
It's just it's an album. I mean, go ahead. There's some good tracks on there for sure. It's just like
It's not the huge discography of all the other people I've been listening to.
Sun, Kill, Moon or anything? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Neil Young.
Yeah.
I promise we won't review his Starbucks hating record unless it's like, if it's really, really bad or it's like another classic, but I think it's just going to be in the middle.
Yeah, but we've tried.
Squeak in some Neil Young talk, of course.
He'll get mentioned for sure, but we'll see if we do a all-out analysis of it. But all right, I think that about wraps it up for Florence and the Machines. How big, how blue, how beautiful. Wouldn't you say so, Kyle?
I would say so.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you for saying so. And thank you for joining us on Test Patterns, people, because that's it. We are done with episode number 154, so thank you for listening as always. Before I do end, I do have to say, if you'd like to support the show without spending any extra money, but if you like buying things on Amazon, you just have to do one little thing. Before you buy something on Amazon, use a link that we provide you, and what happens is Amazon sends us some of the money that you give to Amazon. So it costs you no extra money. Amazon just gives us money for saying the word Amazon. The link you have to click on is found in a couple different places. I would recommend looking at the show description and just clicking on it a couple times near the end of the description about this show. It says, like, you want to support the show? Click on this Amazon link, blah, blah, blah. Click on that, and there you go. But if you don't like doing that, if you hate reading things, you can type things. You can type in the URL, testpatterns.libsyn, libsyn.com, and click on that, and then click on the banner at the top of our page, and there you go, same thing. And once you do that, you should just bookmark that and use that. And then you don't have to listen to what I said at all. You can just ignore me and you can just fast forward through this part and you can just be like, shut up, Dan. But you can't fast forward through this if you don't buy things off of Amazon using the link. There's some weird thing where it won't let you do that. I can't explain technology. It won't let you do that. But if you do use the Amazon link, you have not heard any of this at all. So you don't even know I'm saying this. That's all for this. No siri. So that is all for this week's episode of Test Patterns. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, dear listener. And we will see you again next week. Same time, same place, same internet. Kyle.
You tricked me there with the Kyle there. But here we got here. I'm going to read from Bizarro issue number 1, which is backwards because Bizarro is backwards. It am so easy being hero on your planet. Me am hardly ever lonely. Everyone hate Bizarro. At home, Bizarro am Mr. Unpopular. Me am want to crowd me head, but we hear call that catch ear and harden heartness. This.
Rise and shine, birthday bear. The man really sinks into work.
More whirly birth incoming.
I got exactly what he came for. Plenty of murder to go around.
More flesh between us than our goal.
Good to see your sense of humor coming back.
I intended no humor.
You're killing me, pal.
You're falling back! Murder them in their holes!
You say you intend no humor. Murder holes. Comedy gold, my friend. That's it, Ishii. Dinner time.
I'll need a moment. Damn. I don't have an access port.